Welcome to Career Tools. This week, resilience in your career, part two. The questions this cast answers are, what is resilience? How does resilience relate to my career? And how do I build resilience?
We're coming to Chicago, February 27th and 28th. We will be in Chicago. We're hosting an EMC and ECC, Effective Management and Communication. If you're in the area or just in the Midwest, it's an opportunity to learn the next steps to being a more effective professional, better management, better communication, and you get to meet other like-minded professionals. We love coming to Chicago, and we'd really like to see you there too. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Our next point is to stay fit. I find this one is very on point with the timing because we just started the new year.
Yes.
So everyone's beginning of the goal is stay fit. So we're going to help you find even more reasons than just your New Year's resolution of why staying fit is important, or getting fit, should I say, if you happen to be out of that routine. Your resilience is downgraded if your body is not at its best. Right when you're feeling off, it impacts not just your mind, but your body, and your body affects your mind. The Latin motto, mens sana in corpore sano, I hope I said that right, means a healthy mind and a healthy body. And that suggests that physical exercise improves the body's condition and the brain's performance. The better you can think, the more likely you can stay calm, focus, think of solutions, persist, and adapt in the face of adversity. So regular physical activity has been shown to reduce stress, anxiety, and symptoms of depression, all of which can impede your resilience.
And the discipline and dedication required to stick to a fitness regime can spill over into other areas of life, fostering a sense of self-efficiency and control, which are critical components of resilience. So if you're not fit now, getting in shape will increase your mental resilience before your body gets there. The very fact that you have a piece of paper or a calendar on your wall that shows the X's of the days you went for a walk improves your brain and says to your brain, I'm a person who does things they say they're going to do. And that improves your resilience, even if all you did was walk to the end of the street. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, getting through a tough workout, even if a tough workout is only walking to the street, literally teaches your mind that you can get through tough times, even when that tough time is a layoff, which is way more consequential than a 60-minute workout. It's the weirdest thing. Well, I guess it's not that weird. It's odd to me that your brain relates those two things, like that a workout where it's perfectly safe and you're in a room and there's people around you and all that stuff, and a layoff, which is a completely different situation, that it would equate those two things and say, I've got through workouts, I can get through a layoff. But apparently, they are the same.
And I think it's the same mindset, right? Mm-hmm. If no matter what the tough time is or the difficulty, your brain is saying, this is terrible, but I'm going to keep going, whether it's that workout or, you know, you get laid off, your brain is saying the same thing to you. And if you can get through one, your brain's like, oh yeah, no, we can do this. It's not great, that 60-minute exercise, but at the end you're like, yes. I equate that to when I ran a marathon. The whole time I'm like, I'm never going to do this again. And then I hit them. I was like, I've never felt as good in my life as when I crossed that finish line. And it took me about 6 months and I was like, no, I'll do that again. Right?
Yeah.
So I think it's the same thing.
The better you feel, the better you can deal with whatever is thrown at you. And we all know that tempers are shorter when sleep is in short supply. Whatever the reason is, whether you've got, you know, children who've been up all night or you've been partying too late, it doesn't matter. The shorter the sleep you had the night before, the shorter your temper the day after. That's just life, right? And anecdotally, rage quitting and firing goes up when the hours of sleep go down. This is Wendy's theory about rage quitting. The people who rage quit didn't have enough sleep the night before.
Yeah. When I rage quit my exercises, it's because I didn't sleep well.
So physical health, mental health, emotional well-being are all connected, and neglecting any one of these can diminish your resilience.
Let's talk about how to analyze your responses and implement changes. You cannot increase your ability to weather difficult times if you do not evaluate your current actions and decide to make changes in the future, if that's applicable. No one wants to think about a difficult conversation, like an argument with their boss. However, it's essential to take time to analyze the situation.
So you want to ask yourself, could the situation have been approached differently? Even if your stance was justified, were there strategies for de-escalation or alternative solutions you could have tried and could try in the future? And asking yourself these questions is not a sign of doubt, but a strategic tool for professional growth and a source of future resilience. And I was listening to a podcast, and I don't know who it was, this morning. It's the problem with listening to podcasts in the car. You can't see who it is, who was talking about journaling. And he was literally saying, all you have to do is write down what happened in a situation. And there's something about being remote from it. It's sort of like watching it on a TV screen. So you don't feel so close to the emotion. And it's easier for you to see what else you could have done or what part you played in it, and therefore see solutions. So one of the things you could do is just write down what happened. And apparently, magically, you might see how you could handle that situation in the future. Even if your boss does exactly the same thing, you might see, oh, you know, he really, really does not like the word deadline. I'll use a different word.
Yeah. Can shed a different light on it, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah.
If you're just writing the facts down. I like that. Now, while the contemporary application of the term triggers in a professional setting may reflect an inappropriate crossover from the therapeutic language to the business domain, it can serve as a catalyst for introspection regarding one's behavior and responses. So whenever you experience a reaction that feels like a trigger, it is worthwhile to critically assess whether the event genuinely warranted such a response or if it's an overreaction that's disproportionate to the situation at hand, and whether you could act differently in the future. Right? And maybe writing it down can help you see how you reacted. Was it okay? Was it an overreaction? And it's really hard to do that in the moment. So you have to remove yourself to really think about it. And it helps with self-awareness too. It helps you know how you reacted, how others reacted, and kind of takes the emotion out of it, I would say.
And that's what goes back to having friends who were not involved, who are mm-hmm. maybe outside the company, and just being able to tell them what happened and them being uninvested in the situation. You get a different perspective. And sometimes that perspective is, mate, it was all you.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends that have no problem telling me that.
So I was trying to explain the next thought in the show notes, and it's really difficult to explain, but there's an element of, we go through our working lives and we look at day to day, and we get to the end of the day and you think, what did I do all day? And you're doing the little things, the things that are right in front of you every day, mm-hmm. but you don't think of the longer term things. It's kind of like not putting money away for retirement, because it's like years and years away and you never think about it. And then you mm-hmm. hit 60 and you discover, I've got no savings. You have to think about all of those decisions you're making every day that don't matter terribly much. You know, it doesn't matter that I didn't save for retirement today. And it doesn't matter that I didn't save for retirement tomorrow. But when I get to 60, all of those little decisions today, tomorrow, the next day, they're going to matter. And yeah. So there's little decisions that we make at work today, tomorrow, the next day, that roll up to something at the end of the quarter or the end of the year or the end of our careers. And those things, I think we rarely step back enough to think about them until we get to the moment of retirement and discover we've got no savings. So
yeah.
just stepping back and thinking, do I need to change something, will help us not get to those tough times. And when we do, have some strategies to get through them.
Yeah. And, you know, there's always those hints of what's coming, right? Mm-hmm. We get those little inklings. And then there's the point that we get to that we're like, oh, in hindsight, I should have done that differently.
Or I should have seen that coming. You know, yeah. Like, oh, the signs were there and I didn't see it because I never stepped back and looked.
Yeah. Or you're just not paying attention to those things. Maybe the first time, but if you can look back, become more aware of what you did in that situation, that's going to help you the next time all those inklings or things you're like, oh no, I've been here before. So let's not do that buildup again. So if you can see it coming, you can be prepared. And we have the guidance on how to spot like those layoffs that are coming, for example. Don't forget that you have a history of positive responses too. So even though we've talked a little bit about those negative, know that you've responded in positive ways too. Right? When you're looking back, think of the positives that you've done, or ask that relationship friend about the positives that we talked about earlier.
Right. I mean, I used to go to an office where there were a bunch of offices, and there was a therapist next to the office that I was going to, and she had a sign outside that said, "You have successfully," something like, "You've successfully conquered 99% of the days of your life so far." Yeah, you know, you've got through all 99% of every day until today, you've got through the day. So,
yeah,
you know, consider yourself successful, which is true. You have successfully met the challenges in your career to today. So you have a repository of resilience. Every instance where you have overcome a difficulty is a testament to your capacity to endure and thrive. So you can document these experiences and these strategies that lead to success and use them for future challenges. And when I say document, I don't mean, you know, write, get a file folder and, you know, start color coding them and having, you know, a Dewey Decimal system for
a whole library.
Exactly. Zettelkasten. You don't need that. But just keep the email that reminds you what you did in a folder somewhere, or make a note on your phone if that's where you keep important things to you. Wherever you keep things that you want to be reminded of at certain times, keep it there. It doesn't need to be something formal. It just needs to be in your wherever you look when you need a pick-me-up place. That's where.
I have a friend. She always takes on these workout challenges, and she prints it out, the workout. She crosses it off, and then she pins it up in the same spot. So there's probably 25 different pieces of paper. It doesn't take up much space, but she's like, no, I completed this. I did the workout. And she gives herself credit, and it's in her little workout area. It always puts me to shame because I go over there. I was like, ooh, I should probably work out more. But it's her helpful reminder of, I mean, it's nothing fancy. She marked off the boxes and it's right there. Like, so she knows that if it's a hard workout that day, that she's already done it hundreds of times before.
Yeah. All those little pieces of paper. I like that. Yeah. And all those skills and strengths that you've demonstrated are not isolated victories. They're part of your professional repertoire, ready to be applied to the current tests and the future ones.
How can you practice interviewing candidates without having a job vacancy? Use the Video Effective Hiring Manager course, newly re-recorded by Kate and myself. It has practice for the creation of job descriptions, taking notes, and even interjecting while a candidate is speaking. Practice in private and make better decisions in public. Visit us online at manager-tools.com/products today.
Next, we're going to set realistic expectations.
The refrain for the end of 2023 seemed to be "in this economy." Every sentence ended "in this economy." So, for example, it's unrealistic to expect that you'll get a 5% raise in this economy. Although, as a side note, don't let the fact that there are layoffs persuade you that no one in any of those companies is getting a raise. The two are generally unconnected. However, if you had a great 2023 and you're not getting a raise in this economy, you might be able to negotiate for a non-monetary increase, such as more time off or more flexibility in hours or work location.
Most companies are shaped like pyramids, with fewer vice presidents than there are directors and fewer directors than there are managers. Now, as a manager, that means your ambition to be vice president may not be realistic based on the numbers alone or the available positions. That doesn't mean you can't be a great director or even a great manager. So giving up and coasting in your current role or fighting and clawing for the top are not the only two options that you have when it comes to your career growth.
And dealing with the disappointment of the realization that we'll never be all the things we imagined is part of life. The midlife crisis part of life. And it's part of corporate midlife crisis to realize that we can't all be CEO.
Yeah.
But remember, though, that grit was defined as passion and perseverance for long-term goals of personal significance. And there's nothing that says that you can't have passion for being a manager or even an individual contributor, passion for whatever it is that you do. There's plenty of people who love working with directly with customers.
Yeah.
And are quite happy doing that every single day. And if that's what you love, then do that. You don't need to be CEO.
That's why it's a personal goal.
Exactly.
Not the expectations of others. And now we're going to address problems within your influence. There are problems that you can solve or which you can have an effect. Those are in your circle of influence. So work on those. Macro problems like the world economy or what products our competitors are releasing in our circle of concern, we can worry about them, but we can't affect them. As Mark says, worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but doesn't get you anywhere. I also like to think of all those times in my life where I'm like, oh, I worried for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You look back and you're like, oh, I blew that way out of proportion. I worried about things that weren't even close. That's so much wasted energy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that circle of influence model comes from Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I don't know if it came from anywhere before that, but it's certainly in that book. And Covey points out we can only react to the problems in a circle of concern. So our competitor is in the circle of concern, and we can only react after they've done something. Mm-hmm. We can't proactively do something because we don't know what they're going to do. In the circle of influence, you can be proactive. So problems like a difficult subject that you know you want to talk about with your boss, you can proactively bring up that discussion because mm-hmm. it's within your circle of influence. There's no need to wait for that conversation. So you can have you can control what's within your circle of influence. You can have an effect on it. Whereas the circle of concern, all you can do is react to what's happening.
Yeah. And this way of looking at the world is also called having an internal locus of control. Those with an internal locus of control believe that outcomes of our actions are contingent on what we do. If we take action, outcomes change. So instead of being passive victims of circumstances, resilient individuals take an active approach to problem solving. They seek solutions and make decisions that help them move forward. They are not likely to have fewer problems or to be more successful in solving them, but they are more likely to get through difficult times and gain equilibrium more quickly merely because they take action they believe will change the situation. That sense of control, right?
Yeah, exactly. So from childhood, some of us naturally exhibit resilience and other people find it more challenging. It is something that some people seem to be born with and some people don't have as much of. But that doesn't mean that you can't become more resilient. Much like an athlete who gains steadiness with every practice session on the balance beam, we can develop skills to better withstand the shocks of professional life. And with practice, we can regain our productivity and our effectiveness more quickly after each setback. And it's important to remember that we can't save all our training for the days of competition. You have mm-hmm. to train ahead of the competition. If you're an athlete or a football player, you can't can't do all the training on the day of the match. You have to do it beforehand. So you must be continually building your relationships, your physical fitness, your skills in handling difficult situations. All the time you're doing that before the crisis or the difficult time comes, you are building resilience for when that time comes. And fortunately, in some ways, everyday life offers us small challenges to help us strengthen these resilience muscles bit by bit. You know, if there hasn't been a stone in your shoe today, don't worry, there will be tomorrow, and you can build your resilience muscle. And, you know, don't cry over the little challenges. Just think about it as one rep in your resilience training.
Yeah, oh, I love that.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Wendy.
We'll be back next week with a different topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye.